The setting for our story this morning from the Gospel of Luke finds Jesus on the defensive. Jesus is on the defensive a lot in his life, and most of the time his accusers are the same, the Pharisees and the scribes, the scriptures say. It's no different here. The Pharisees come to him and notice that he is hanging out with the wrong crowd, of all things, tax collectors and sinners. And so the Pharisees start an attack on him. Not directly to him, the scriptures say. They begin kind of grumbling, maybe mumbling to themselves, maybe talking behind Jesus' back, saying Jesus should not be hanging out with these people. This is the wrong sort of crowd. No one's supposed to hang out with them. And Jesus gains word of his accusers and what they are saying. And so Jesus mounts a defense, a very unlikely defense. Jesus defends himself by telling a story. And of all things, a story that most of us can relate to. A story about somebody who has lost something. A story that we all too readily identify with, I imagine. Who among us has never had something valuable of ours misplaced? Hardly a day goes by when we misplace something, a wad of cash, some important keys, some vital documents, a personal memento. I'm speaking here of Jessica and I. And I don't know if you can identify with this. It's a story about someone who has lost something. Humorist Dave Barry once told the story in his wonderful book, Dave Barry's Guide to Guys, subtitle, a very short book. Tells the story about a family who was on vacation one day on a very long trip, and the setup in the car was something like this. The man was driving, and in the back seat was the wife, who was taking care of their infant, who was strapped securely in the car seat, in the back seat. At one moment, the family decided to stop for a little while at a local tavern. They pulled off the interstate, and they sat and had a little relaxing spell for a little while. And then it came time for them to continue on their journey. The wife asked the husband if, while she went to the restroom for a minute, would take care of the little one and make sure the child was back in the car seat, strapped securely so that they can continue on their journey. Now, at this point, it's important to know that there's a fundamental premise at work here, which is that men have a one-track mind. That is Dave Barry's argument for the rest of the story. So the man, following orders, takes the child, goes to the back of the car and places the child in the car seat, and takes care of all appropriate straps here and there, making sure that everything is exactly the way it needs to be. And so finally it's time for them to all just kind of drive off. Man steps in the car and gets back on the interstate to drive. Now, it takes a little while for the story to continue, but about an hour or so later, the man realizes that the conversation is a bit quiet and starts talking to his wife about making sure that they get to their destination on time and how it's important to not make the wrong moves because it's important to get to this place quickly, to which the wife, obviously through her silence, agrees. Until that tragic moment when the man turns around to see his child safely there, but not his wife. Did I mention that the tavern that they stopped at was in a particularly seedy part of the country? Well, after an hour or so of driving, the man decides to turn around and be reunited with his loving and very forgiving wife. At least us men hope so. all of us have done this. We have, well, not lost our spouses, but lost something that is of great worth to us. If not for a little while, perhaps sometimes forever, we have misplaced these things. And so when we first encounter Jesus' story, our reaction, of course, is to identify first with the person who has lost something. And I imagine that might be the response that the Pharisees and scribes might have first had. Jesus begins his uncanny defense by telling two stories. And in a bit of fairness, the first story is about a man who forgets something, and the second story is about a woman who forgets something. Equal opportunity here. For Jesus realizes that we all misplace things that are of value to us. And so our reaction might be to first identify with the shepherd, who is in charge of 100 sheep, takes care of 99 but misplaces one. Or to identify with that woman who misplaces a valuable coin out of the 10 that she is taking care of. She misplaces one and turns her house upside down, sweeping the living room, turning her sofas inside out, not resting until she finds that valuable coin. And so we are left with kind of a strange feeling about this, because we wonder, what in the world is Jesus trying to tell his accusers by this? More importantly, what is the meaning of these two stories for our lives today? And what does this have to do with God? And at this point, I want to take a third story that's in our Bible and kind of superimpose that story upon the gospel narratives of this morning. And talk about a story that involves two people that we are familiar with. It is, in fact, the first story involving human beings within our Bible, found in the book of Genesis, involving a man named Adam and a woman named Eve. You know the story all too well. This is a story after God had created all of creation and created man and woman, had given the responsibility of man and woman to enjoy God's creation, enjoy fellowship with God, because God had set forth beauty and order out of chaos. But it also given Adam and Eve just one responsibility. You remember? To not eat out of one tree's fruit, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You see, God, despite creating all of these things, also gave a remarkable gift to human beings. Gave Adam and Eve the gift of the freedom to choose. The freedom to decide their own destiny. The freedom to decide whether to follow God's commandments or not. And so the story of the creation of Genesis is not just the story of what God gives. God gives us beauty. God gives us order. God gives us peace. It is also a story of what God gives up. God gives up the power to control us. God gives up the power to manipulate us, to treat us like puppets, to follow God's will. A remarkable story about how Adam and Eve were given the gift to choose. And what did they choose? You remember. To disobey God's commandment. To eat of that tree when they knew they shouldn't have. And so in a sense, Adam and Eve became lost themselves. Not because God forgot where they were, or because God misplaced them, but nonetheless, they became lost, not following God's commandment. And what did they do? The scriptures say that they hid. Hid because of their shame, hid because of their guilt. And the remarkable thing about this story, the way this story ends, is that even though God gave up the power to control Adam and Eve's will, God did not give up for one second the remarkable care that God has for Adam and Eve. And so just like this shepherd who searches out for that missing sheep, and just like this woman who turns her house over to find this valuable coin, God the Creator sought out Adam and Eve, looking for them, God's beloved creation. You remember what the scriptures say? Genesis 3:9 said, "The Lord God called out to the man and said to Adam, 'Where are you?'" These are stories of about a searching God, a seeking God, who, despite the numerous times that we hide for whatever reason, because God has given us the freedom to choose our own destiny, God does not stop caring for us. God always seeks us out, calling us home, calling out to us, persuading us to change, no matter what we do. The stories of Genesis and the Gospel are not about a forgetful God or a carefree God who forgets about all of us simply because we have the right to do what we want to do. Rather, it is a story about a remarkably caring God who seeks out the lost and does not stop until they are found. God is like the man who lights that lamp and goes out in the middle of the night until that sheep is found. God is like that woman who doesn't stop until that coin is found. And so now we can revisit this question. Why did Jesus tell this story? What does it mean for the Pharisees and the scribes? And what does it mean for us? There are three things that I think that this means. The first is that Jesus uses this imagery because it's a common imagery. Lost sheep, a common situation. Lost coin, that's a common situation too. And so what Jesus is telling the Pharisees and the scribes is that the lost are common also. They are all around us. You can't avoid them, and if you do, you are avoiding one of the great facts of life, that there are many around us and even among us that have strayed from God. You cannot avoid them, and Jesus was not. He was amongst the tax collectors and the sinners because he knew that they were lost and that there was nothing that he could do to avoid them. Jesus' message goes a step further by saying, not only are the lost around us, it is Jesus' responsibility to seek them out, not to leave them alone. That even though they have done these things, whatever they have done, for them to find themselves in this situation, they are not outside of Jesus' care. That is why Jesus hangs out with the sinners. But there is a final, incredible message behind this story. That not only does God give us the freedom to choose, and not only does God love us so much to never forget about us and seek us out, but there is incredible rejoicing when the lost are found. The imagery that is given in our Gospels is a remarkable one. The angels rejoice. The heavens are joyful. God smiles a big smile when that lost coin and that lost sheep come home. When that sinful person makes a decided turn to change his or her life and become a child of God, a disciple of God, that is a joyous moment. And the motivation for Jesus in this time for hanging out with sinners is that he did not do this out of obligation or duty, but because out of a deep love, he cared for those people, and he cares for us, knowing that in those times when we decide once again to be a follower of God, that brings God great, great joy. And so there are two challenges for us this morning from this passage. The first is to realize that God is still seeking the lost, and that there are lost people all around us. We can ignore them, or we can join God in this effort to reach out to those who, for whatever reason, have made decisions in their life that have resulted in shame or guilt. For whatever reason they are lost, whether it be resentment or temptation or addiction or whatever it may be, nothing they can do takes them out of the sight of a seeking God. You remember John Stroman's words last week when he spoke about that inescapable presence, the presence of God that we can never get away from, no matter what decisions we or others have made. And we can join with God in seeking those who are in need. And the second challenge is for us that there are moments in our lives, perhaps even right now, when we, for whatever reason, feel shame or anger or anxiety, or feel that we are lost ourselves, that we have perhaps strayed from God, maybe made the wrong kinds of decisions. It is important to know that God is our great shepherd, that God will sacrifice everything to find you, and that in fact, you are here this morning because God has been seeking you out. That at this very moment, whatever situation you find yourself in, whatever guilt or sin you might be feeling, God will sacrifice it all, even God's own Son, to call you home, to call you back, to let you know that you are forgiven. And that is the most remarkable gift at all. In a few moments, we will be celebrating the Lord's Supper, coming up to the front here and acknowledging the remarkable gift that Jesus has given us, the gift of remembering His work on the cross and through the resurrection. Let this moment be for you a moment of being found again, of being returned to a heavenly God who has been seeking you out every day. That despite whatever reason you have been lost, through Jesus Christ you can be found. In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all. Amen.